Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in radio land. I want to welcome you to this Sunday night. It's a very special Sunday night here in Living and Thriving Land. I have a really exciting guest from Southern California, Dr. Shante McFarland, on tonight, and she's going to tell us our story, her story, in regards to how she helps not only teenage girls, but people in general. I'm really excited to have her on and learn more about her. If you have any questions whatsoever, definitely call in. The number here, 347-205-9443. I have to tell you, it has been a whirlwind of a week. I'm currently driving right now. Shh, don't tell my ex-boyfriend who was a police officer. It's been crazy. It's just been, I've got 5 books that are being released. I've been invited to co-author in 2 more. And it's just been a crazy week. I've been back-to-back radio interviews. I've been working at the restaurant and writing. And still a single mom, full-time, raising an incredible child. So here we are, Sunday night, cruising, just had some delicious Thai food at a local Thai food restaurant. They do it right. And I could not be more excited to have you on, Dr. McFarland. How are you tonight, my dear?
Hi, I'm doing well. It's kind of funny. It has been a whirlwind week. I was sitting on the couch just now. I kept hearing some banging on my garage door. I'm actually in Hawaii. My husband's from Los Angeles, and all our family is there, most of our family, but we're stationed in Hawaii right now.
Very cool. I saw a number from Hawaii calling. I'm like, is that Dr. Wayne Dwyer? Holy cow, I'm going on air. You're going to have to wait, buddy.
Yes, we're in Hawaii, and so my husband's away right now. But I heard some banging on the garage door. I'm like, oh, my gosh, is someone trying to break in our garage on face? And so I put on my big mama panties, and I opened the garage like, okay, let's do it. And it was just 2 kids playing soccer. And I was like, guys, go to the side. I'm like, what's going on? Move it. There's a big field across the street. So, oh, my goodness. That was fun.
Well, just for everybody's information, big mama panties in that situation is actually a pair of diapers. So.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you're safe from the soccer ball. That's exciting.
So funny. Oh, my goodness. It reminds me of how sometimes kids are afraid of the dark and they think it's a big monster, but it's really just their little teddy bear with the shadow,
Yep.
Like, it's nothing to be afraid of.
My daughter and I went to see Strange Magic. It's a George Lucas film. And I was very disappointed, but that's neither here nor there. One of the characters, he is this handsome little elf dude who totally rocks it out. And he's trying to be brave, and he's going into the dark woods, and then all of a sudden he sees this shadow of this monstrous being going to eat him, and he thinks it's a goblin. And when he turns around, it's this little tiny raccoon-looking thing, and it's just a playful creature. But the way they had the shadow set up where it was all terrifying, he was like, go ahead, eat me, just make it quick. It reminds me of all the childhood stories we had,
Oh, that's hilarious. Make it quick. That's
make
hilarious.
Oh, well, he was very brave. Oh, my goodness. Brave little elf.
Yay.
So anyway, Dr. Shante, tell us who you are and what you do.
I am a teacher. I actually teach right now in one of the psychiatric units here in Honolulu at the Queens Medical Center. And I work with, we call them keikis, but those are the little children up to adolescents. So I have had 2 years old up till 18 that I work with at the psych unit. Mm-hmm.
But you do something really special with them, and that's why you're on the show. So let's talk a little bit about what makes you unique and what inspires you and why do you do what you do? But we have to figure out what it is exactly that you do.
So what else I do? I also speak and I minister to women based on some of my experiences. I heard it put this way, the difference between ministry and medicine is with medicine, the doctor, let's say a heart doctor, didn't have to have, you know, a heart disease before he was able to recognize your condition and be able to help you and treat you. But in ministry, a lot of times it's the sick killing the sick. You know, it's like a person who has gone through abuse, they can understand and relate to another person who's going through it, and they can better help them. And so it's the sick healing the sick versus in medical is the well healing the sick. We're always still striving to be better people. We're always striving to, you know, get over things that have happened to us, that people have done to us or we've done to ourselves. So in treating and working with some of the patients and students that I have, I share with them my story, which I put in the book. One is Cinderella Still Going to the Ball, and that is an inspirational memoir, and it talks about me and growing up and, you know, having my innocence stolen around age 4 by a babysitter, and I was never able to share it with my family, my mother or my stepfather. I was never able to share it, and then moving on through life, we just had a very abusive home. Physically abusive, verbally abusive, you know, emotionally abusive. And a teacher is the one person who I don't think she knew just how bad things were for me, but she nurtured me, and she knew that I was capable of using my mind to get out of my situation in a way to free myself. And so I decided to, you know, really allow her in, even though I was so guarded. I let her into my life, and I started to do better in school, and not only academically but socially, and I thrived. And I didn't let any of my past hold me back. I really just put it behind me, but I didn't realize that I was still so empty inside from what had happened. So I found the strength and the motivation and inspiration to really heal from the past so that I could be a good mother and, you know, a good teacher and a good wife. So I shared that with my students, that they can have more, that their life is based on a true story, and they can make the most out of it.
It was funny. I was I was being interviewed for one of my books the other day, and the person asked me, she too had been in foster care, and I apologize, I'm getting over a cold, so hopefully you can hear me. She too had asked me about, you know, foster care and how painful it was to be abused on a regular basis and so on and so forth. And she said, did you ever hit your child? And it was one of the hardest questions I've ever had, because nobody's ever been that blatant to ask me. And I'm like, hell no. Like, I can't hurt my daughter. And she goes, you know, most people in our situation, because she too had gone through a very similar tragedy, hit their children. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know how to do that. So what was your response when you had your first child? Like, was that something that you were afraid of? I know for me it was. As a first-time mom, I'm thinking,
I thought I had appealed. That's so, you know, something inside of me a situation let me know what was still inside of me that I still had hurt and I wasn't healed over it. And I have a huge problem with abuse. I see a ton of abused children on a daily, and I see the effects. But when I had my first baby, it was actually while I was still carrying my son, there was this video that was going around on Facebook because these two girls were caught by their dad making a twerk video. And at the time, I was living in St. Louis, Missouri, and I was teaching. So I was familiar with that whole, like, teenage girls going to make these twerk videos. I don't know. But the dad, I guess, caught them, and he went in their room, and he's lashing them with this controller cord, and I broke down. It was on my husband. He was looking on his phone, and it was a video. He said, oh, my goodness, look at this. And I couldn't see it because I was in the closet, but I could hear it. And I screamed at him, and I said, no, I don't want to see it. And I just started crying, and he's like, he's on his phone. He's like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, what's wrong? I said, and I just broke down and told him, you know, like, I can't do that, that, you know, I suffered that abuse before. And you know, just to hear it, it just really triggered something painful. And so with my first child, I knew that I would never do that to my son, and I still have an issue with it. I don't like the sound of belts clinking, you know, any of that. It just, like, puts me in a totally different, like, headspace. So with my son, because I was like, oh, you know, the discipline part, you know, I don't know about that. You know, I wouldn't know what to do because, I mean, my son has sickle cell as well. So he already goes through enough pain in his life, so I definitely wouldn't add to it. So I just pray for patience. I think I learned how to be a better and a more patient mother because I was a teacher for 6 years before I gave birth to him. And you can't hear kids in school. You know, and I have great classroom management skills, so.
I think that there are some of us, I think there's like three kinds of abused children. One, there are people like us who can so empathize with the person who is inflicted on that we can't do the inflicting. Or there's the extreme, and there are the ones that have to do the inflicting because it's the only way they can feel. Where we are real feelers, like we feel so much to a point of actually being disabled if push came to shove, because I don't think we could actually necessarily do anything about it to a loved one. But somebody stranger, I think we could take care of it. And then there are individuals who just can't do anything except be self-destructive. What is your thought on that?
My philosophy is you can't have a death of discipline because of past death by discipline. So I still build a very structured life for my son, and I've educated myself on, you know, hey, you know, give them this time out. They can't have this, you know, how to work through their tantrums and things like that. So I've been able to still be able to, like, discipline my son as far as, like, take things from him or, you know, try to keep him in a structured life without abusing him ever. Because I don't think it's a thin line between abuse, you know, and discipline.
Right.
It's a very broad line. Like, you have to have patience because, yes, your kids will drive you crazy. But you have to just recognize, like, what is they're interested in, you know, learn their patterns. They're human beings. Learn that, oh, you know what, right now he's wilding out because he needs a nap. You know, he needs to go be put in the crib and take a little nap. He'll calm down in a few minutes because he's just sleepy or he's hungry or this isn't what he likes to have to entertain, you know, himself with. So
right, and that's just their form of communication. And for us, we have a different cerebral process in regards to how we want to communicate or be communicated to. And for little people, they don't really have that kind of finite, tuned in and developed sense of communication. So sometimes some of the kids will just lash out or be silly or be, you know, rambunctious. And we have to really own our parenthood and our adulthood in order to gain the kind of representation that we want them to be, you know?
I mean, my son, he's turning two this Saturday. So he
Happy
is
birthday.
The Carol Kids are among us. Thank you. They are upon us. Okay. I mean, we were at church this morning, and we get to the door, and whenever we get in, the church is beautiful. It's this new church we just joined, but it's an old theater, and they made it a church, and it's beautiful marble floors. I've never seen anything like it. But whenever we get there, my son just, like, gets on his knees. He doesn't want to walk across the floor. He wants me to carry him. And so we're planning for our new baby, and I'm trying to break him of mommy picking him up because when I'm pregnant, I know I'm not going to want to pick him up. So I'm like, come on, no, let's walk. And he'll just sit there. And all of the people in the church are like, oh, do you need help? I'm like, please don't help. Because we're learning right now. I'm learning to let him be there until he gets up. But, yes, it's a process. But best there's a little communication. He's like, I'm going to sit here and wait and see if I can break her down. And see if she'll pick me up.
So talk to us a little bit about, you know, you've had the emotional, mental, physical, and sexual abuse throughout your youth. How were you able to really focus and wipe your knees off and say, you know what, funk this, I'm going to move forward and I'm going to be better and I'm going to better myself and I'm going to prove to you all that all you were my teachers and my role now is to do good in this world. How did you come to that place? Most people would just be grappling with pain and wallowing in it.
Oh my goodness. I
came to that place. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. Let me see. I think for the longest I tried to prove my family wrong, my mom and dad, my stepdad. I tried to prove them wrong, like, you know, you shouldn't have done that to me. I'm going to prove you, like, you're going to see. You should have treated me right because I'm going to leave you in the dust. I'm going to leave you behind. That was the first of my first thoughts, because I joined the Army when I was 17. I joined this delayed entry program, and I was doing superior in school and ROTC, and I joined the Army. I was getting all these medals, and, you know, I was still looked empty because they weren't impressed by that. I still wasn't the favorite. I was still the black sheep, even after, you know, I had achieved so much and went to college, and, you know, I started to play college soccer, and, you know, my stepdad never came to any of my games. My mom came to maybe the first 15 minutes of a game that I had out of my entire 3 years that I played. So, you know, I felt so empty. So what made me really just move forward was a healing process that I went through. I took these, like, sheets of paper, and I wrote down all of the things that had ever happened. And it took me a long time. At first, I wanted to rush it into 3 days. And even though I went over all the sheets of paper in 3 days, it took me about a year to continue to, like, forgive for those situations and create some space. And then I was able to leave it behind me because I had forgave first, and I forgave them. And so that way, if I ever brought up the conversation with them and we wanted to talk about it, I didn't have any hard feelings against it because I had already forgiven. And if they had never apologized, which they have not apologized to this day, you know, if I never got their apology, I could still move on. Because no matter what, so what, you know, I had these achievements and awards and trophies. I deserved to be loved just like my siblings. I deserved to have care because I was their child, not because I had, you know, all of these accomplishments and because I went on, you know, to become a PhD and, you know, make more money and all this other stuff. Not because of what I can give them. I just deserve to be loved, period. So that's how I can move on, really.
Do you think that part of the lesson that the universe of God has offered people like us is the fact that we expect unconditional? We're not going to be given necessarily the unconditional, but we have to learn how not to expect it, which is what unconditional means.
Oh, that's very
question.
Interesting. I think for years in relationships that I had, you know, I expected people to just treat me so much more better, but then I had to realize that people are flawed, you know, and they have their own issues as to, you know, even looking at my parents, you know, they just passed it down. Like you were saying, you had an interview lately. They said, well, you know, most people who hit their children, they pass it down, and they have that mentality that, oh, well, you know, it happened to me, and I turned all right. You know, which in reality, they're not all right. But, you know, I expected that unconditional, like, love, you treat me right. You know, I was a love Nazi. But now I just realized that no one can truly give you, I think, unconditional love, no human being. Sometimes things come into place where it gets tested, you know, in relationships with people. In my own life, I can say I have pretty good love relationships. Oh, I thought the phone went out. Sorry. I didn't see the phone. Like, oh, did I hang up on accident?
No, not at all. You're fine. We're running out of time.
Oh, okay. We are.
Nope, that's okay. We've got about 13 minutes left, so I want to make sure that we get your book in. I want to make sure we get your concept of expectation and unconditionality. And continue. You're doing great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think that's the concept with unconditional love is, and, you know, it's funny, I don't think people can give it to me. I feel like I could give it to other people because I feel like I didn't have it. And so I just wanted to love so much. And I remember saying this to one of our educational assistants last week. I said, you know, I never knew a love like this for my son. I never knew I was capable of loving so passionately and so strongly. You know, I would literally give my life for my son because I love him so much. It has truly overtaken me. And I know I'm nervous because we want to have a second baby, and it makes you wonder, like, do I have enough love? Because I love my son so much, and I love my husband so much. And it's like this baby came into my life. I said, you know, then I'm going to have another baby. Will my heart grow? And I feel like it will. I feel like my heart is just expanded for my son, for my husband first, you know, because at first it's my love for myself, my love for God, and then my love for my husband, and it's like my heart continues to grow the more people that I need to love. So I feel like I can give it out, but that I can't receive it, but I know that it's true. But that's just, hey, part of being a human and learning. I'm going to learn that, you know, my husband, as much as he says it, you know, he really does love me unconditionally.
So talk to us a little bit about how, you know, you were able to develop a place, a space, a cave in your body, in your heart, in your mind, which allowed yourself to try to love your husband as much as you do when it's so incredibly hard for children and to develop a sense of trust for anybody.
Let me see. If I get this question right, I think it is how do I create a space to love my husband and my child?
How did you get to a place within yourself where you were able to allow love for your husband in the first place, especially after a mental, emotional, physical abuse and sexual abuse? It's very difficult for any abused person to feel trusted or to allow anybody into their life, but to a capacity of actual marriage and having a healthy marriage. How did you do that?
Oh, yeah, it took me, that's a great question. It took me about 4 years. Oh, well, I'll say 3.5. It took me about 3.5 years, and it was my relationship with God. When I moved to St. Louis, I found this church, well, church found me, and I started to attend this church, and it was total culture shock for me being around people, not because of the religious aspect, but I was around families who loved each other in a way I had never seen before. Moms who always hugged and kissed their children, because my mother was not affectionate. But they just hugged and kissed their children and told them they loved them. Or, you know, I had these new friends who were in their 20s, like me at the time. And so they would call their mom and say, oh, mom, you know, just talk about anything. And when they got off the phone, they say, I love you. And the mom would say, I love you back. Or the mom would say, I love you first. And I never knew that. I never had that loving, affectionate relationship. So I think after a total immersion into a culture where love was at the center of everything for a couple of years, I learned how to love. I never knew how. Even in relationships that I talk about in my book, Cinderella Still Going to the Ball, you know, when I was in college and I had relationships, I equated sex with love. You know, I didn't know, like, how else to show your love and appreciation unless you gave someone your absolute all, which is all I feel like I could give them. And so I learned in that immersion in that culture of love how to, you know, just show and express, you know, by being there, not even by, like, hugs and kisses, but, you know, being there, supporting them. You know, people would come to my award ceremonies and my graduations and, you know, any of the presentations that I would do or speaking engagements. People would come and support me. People would call me and check on me just to see how I was doing or welcome me into their home, because I spent at least 2, I remember for sure, all alone for Christmas. But, you know, other holidays, I would be invited to come over for, like, Thanksgiving or Christmas or just out to eat. And those are things that I just, those small things I wasn't used to. And so that really helped me to let someone else in once I saw for a certain amount of time that these people were genuinely, you know, loving and affectionate people. And so over time, I started to see some problems that I had. So I had to be stripped of a lot of things. You know, I was a very prideful person because I felt like I had, you know, made it on my own and no one cared for me. So I was very, like, haughty and prideful. And I would be mean to people because they hurt people, hurt other people, which is true. I was so hurt, but I would also hurt others. Anyone that I felt like looked like bullies I used to have or looked like my mom or looked like, you know, people had hurt me in my past, I would be totally mean to those people for no reason. So I got a lot of hurt out of me. I guess you can say purged as well. You know, I just was purged of a lot of, like, hate and, you know, just, like, hurtfulness and meanness and things like that. And so at the end, I think I became a totally new person because I went to St. Louis, Missouri to become an attorney, and I came out of there being a humble school teacher. So I completely, my life completely changed in my personality. So I used to be a very hurtful and mean person. And now I'm just, like, nice, soft teacher, and all the kids love me. I'm like, this is, was not my plan, but I love it. I love it. And I think that's how I've been able to love my husband and love my son. It was my experience that I had with God and love, not the religion aspect, which most people would probably, me being a minister, they want me to say it was just a religion, but it wasn't. It was just love for people.
And I think, again, I think that's really admirable because, you know, a lot of people in our situations, they don't always turn out to be loving and they don't always turn out to have that ability to really encompass the compassion and the openness that one needs to move forward, heal, and develop better and healthier relationships. And what I always tell people is the reason why I host this radio show is to give you a chance to be a better version of you. And you're a great example as to how we do that. So in the last few minutes of the show, tell us where we can find your information. Tell us a quick, oops, it's hit my internet. tell us where we can find your book, what your book's about, and, you know, what you really want people out of tonight's episode to really get out of your messaging, and what's the most important part of tonight's show?
Nice. I would say, well, first, the place you can find my book is on Amazon.com. It has Cinderella, Still Going to the Ball, an Untold Story of Abuse, Rescue, and Rehab. And that can be found on Amazon and also on my website, ShantaeMcFarland.com. And that's spelled ShantaeMcFarland.com. And you can find the paperback version of my book on my website and the electronic version on Amazon.com. And let's see, the most important part of tonight, of this show tonight, is that love will heal, love will restore, and God is love. So he will restore and renew, and he can heal relationships. He can, you know, bring back from the dead, you know, their relationships and bring them back to life, and even within yourself. Because at one point, I felt like I was alive, but I was not living. Life didn't seem like it was worth living anymore. And he just really showed me, you know, a better way and a new way. And that I don't have to be some super awesome, super high-achieving person to receive love. It's just a free gift. And that's what everyone wants. Everyone is designed and yearns to just be loved.
All right, groovy. And I absolutely, I will testify it is true. We all are, this whole experience on this crazy revolving orb is to understand, accept, and be loved. And when we can do that, this place will be a totally cool place to be in. That's all I can say about that particular topic. So I'm so grateful that you came into my life. I'm so grateful that you were able to share a little bit of your time with us and your story.
Absolutely.
And enjoy Hawaii. But if you happen to want to send some of that fabulous guano, back guano coffee free, I would not. That is some good stuff.
They do. They do have
it is, it's the craziest, oh, most amazing coffee ever. And I'm like, yeah, it's back guano coffee. And people are like, ew.
You know, I can't say that I've had
it
yet, but you have me interested. I haven't tried it yet, the coffee.
It's a little bit of heaven's gold is all I can say.
Ooh. Well, that's cool. I'm going to be on the lookout now.
That's right. Anyway, so many blessings to you and yours. Good luck on your next child. I am sure you're going to have a great time. And,
yes, I'm excited.
Love and light.
Yes, love and life. Thank you so much, Rusty. It's great.
All right, dear. Take care.
Take care.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. It's Sunday night. It's a groovy night. And we just had Dr. McFarland on the phone, and she was just chatting us up about love, life, and, you know, how to move forward. And that is what we're all about here. Tools for your success. That's what I do here in Living and Thriving World. I want to know that you are the only reason why I, you know, don't go to the movies at 6:30 on Sunday night. It's because I really enjoy being here, and I really enjoy being with you. And I love you. You're beautiful. You are amazing, actually. And, you know, it's time for you to set an example for other people. Go out at very minimum and smile, even if you don't want to. Just go out and smile. Because you know what? That's the best contagion in the world. See you Wednesday.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.